When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up, everybody? You are watching slash listening to the Command Zone podcast. I am one of your hosts today, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Murph. I'm filling in for Josh Lee Kwai today.
It's Murph Lee Kwai, everybody.
Yep, that's me.
Welcome to the show, Murph. We got a big one in front of us. We are doing the best multicolored commanders. In fact, all of the multicolored commanders from Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate. That's a tongueful. But before we get into it, we're going to talk about a lot of cards today. You may want to pick up some of those cards. And the best way to do so is by heading over and typing into our URL, channelfireball.com/command. You're going to see Channel Fireball's marketplace. And what can we say? This is the marketplace. It's the bodega. It's the place for you to go and get all of your sweet, sweet cards. And not just that, sealed product at an amazing price. And you're shopping from local game stores around the country. You're going to get the cards anyway, so why not support the show while you're doing so? And you're going to get great customer service because you're working with real stores, accredited stores by Wizards. And local game stores definitely need our support in this day and age. So please head on over to channelfireball.com/command. And pick up your Magic Card sealed product today. You get some pre-orders in. Are you looking forward to any sets this year, Murph?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Dominaria United, Brothers War.
Woohoo!
I can't wait for Baldur's Gate to come out. All the cards look super sick.
Yes, I'm excited for Unfinity. It's taking its time, but I'm going to pick up some of those lands. So
love those shock lands.
Channelfireball.com/command is the place to do it. Once you get those cards, put them into an Ultra Pro sleeve or a deck box or on a playmat. Do whatever you can to protect your cards because those cards are worth something both to yourself and to someone that you may trade it to in the future. So you want those cards in pristine condition. Ultra Pro is the place to go. They've got your hookup for everything that you need, all the way from your playmats to your dice to your sleeves, your deck boxes. If you're traveling to Magic Fest Vegas like we are, you might want to put some of your decks into travel safe boxes, and Ultra Pro has all of that stuff, the satin towers I use every single time I go out. So definitely make sure you hook it up. ultrapro.com or shop.ultrapro.com/command is also their online store. They have tons of stuff. They also have sales periodically. They just had a Father's Day sale. Great way to get some discounts on some amazing gear, and you can find tons of stuff there, not just Magic the Gathering related. And the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/command zone. We shout out one lucky patron every single episode. So this week's episode is dedicated to Rec Deck.
That's a cool name.
That is a cool name. I believe it may be a show name or something, but Rec Deck, thank you so much. Not just you rock, but you actually subscribed at the year plan, which allows you to save money. So if you're planning on being a patron for longer than just a few months and you'll go for the whole year, you can actually save some money by doing so. So you can check out all those options, patreon.com/command zone.
Very nice.
All right, let's get right into it. The main topic are the multicolored commanders battle for Baldur's Gate. Whew. Okay, so we're not going to cover the multicolored commanders from the commander product. These are just the cards from the main set.
And there's already a lot of them, Jimmy.
Yes.
There's so many.
So before we get into it, we're going to talk just very quickly about the brand new mechanic called Initiative. Murph, why don't you break down what the initiative is?
Okay, so the initiative is basically if you take a dungeon mechanic and monarch and you slap them together into a mechanic. So if you ever have a card that says take the initiative, then you get the initiative token.
Yeah, and like the monarch token, but in this case, it's the initiative token.
Exactly. And so whenever you take the initiative, then you venture into a specific dungeon, the Undercity. So yep.
The dungeons you may remember from the last Dungeons & Dragons set, Adventures into the Forgotten Realms.
It was last year.
They had three different dungeons. There's only one dungeon in the initiative. It's called the Undercity. It plays out just like any of the other dungeons. You can walk through the different rooms. You can only go a certain direction once you've chosen the path. And any cards that say venture into the dungeon allow you to go one room deeper. But the initiative also allows you to do so. And when does that happen, Murph?
So the initiative will let you advance rooms at the beginning of your upkeep. It's not at the beginning of the end step like Monarch. It's at the beginning of upkeep or whenever you take the initiative, either by having a card that says take the initiative or dealing combat damage to a player, which is why it's kind of like the Monarch.
Yep. So cards, the Monarch cards that said you become the Monarch means that you take that from someone else or you introduce the Monarch to the game. You take the initiative is very similar, or if you deal combat damage to someone just like Monarch, you take the initiative then, and then you instantly go into that dungeon.
Yes. And notably, you have a completely different Undercity dungeon than somebody else. So if somebody else takes the initiative, ventures into their own Undercity, goes a couple of rooms in, you don't take over where they took over. You start a fresh dungeon, fresh the Undercity.
Yeah, so that's a little confusing. Obviously, if you're at the table, Monarch isn't hard to track, but if four people are going into the Undercity, you may all want to get your own Undercity card or a different colored dice or something to represent yourself as you move through the dungeon.
Oh, that's cool. It's like a little game of Sorry or something as you're moving through a single one.
Budge the table. This thing would be really annoying if people all got shifted around. You have no idea where they are.
Yeah, maybe there's like a tracker on the phone or something.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Oh, that'd be something. Yeah, maybe
just
we
like
can
a dungeon
think,
tracker
we can
or something.
Think of something. Maybe Lifelinker can add something.
Oh, yeah.
There.
We totally should.
Yeah,
that'd
yeah.
be so handy because I don't want to carry around a bunch of dungeons and be like, what dungeon do I want to venture into this time? Or,
yeah,
oh, it's the Undercity.
I'm also not promising anything because it's development time. another new mechanic is the background mechanic. So these are legendary enchantments that go alongside commanders that say you can choose a background. We're not going to cover those in this review, although they can make a lot of those monocolor commanders into multicolor commanders. There's going to be an entire episode dedicated to that, so pay attention for that. There's just way too much to cover in this single review.
Yeah, notably, the backgrounds will only get paired with monocolor commanders. No multicolor commanders have anything that pairs with backgrounds, so we're not going to talk about it for this review.
Yep. All right, and then we have a few returning mechanics. Myriad, which is whenever you attack a player, you create a copy for each other player at the table, and then those copies attack those players, correct?
Yep.
And then Adventure, similar to what it was last time, going into the old dungeons. And then Dice Rolling. Lots of Dice Rolling. We are in the Dungeons & Dragons set.
No, not Dungeons for Adventure.
Oh,
Adventure
no.
is like from Throne of Eldraine, where you send
you're right.
people on an adventure.
Right, so Adventure is a subtext on a card, basically, that allows you to play it as a card that goes on an adventure, it goes into exile, and then you can cast the main part of the card later from exile. Okay. Throne of Eldraine. Also, the party mechanic is also back. So there's lots of different sort of old mechanics from other sets that kind of made it in here.
Yeah, I'm glad they did because like party and adventure and stuff was all stuff that felt like it should have been in the first Dungeons & Dragons set.
Should have been.
Yeah,
should have been.
I'm glad they're rectifying their mistakes now.
Now it is. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to the multicolored commanders here in alphabetical order.
There are
two parts to this set review, so if you don't hear the card covered in this set review, it will be in the next one. We're going up to the letter J.
It's like halfway through the alphabet.
Yeah, it's about halfway through the alphabet. It's also the best letter of the alphabet.
Best letter of the alphabet, baby.
Yeah, followed up by M for Merv. Okay, so let's start off with Alondo the Seer. This is 2 green and a blue for a 3/5 human shaman. It's got a lot of text.
Get ready.
However, nicely, it's not on like 3 different lines of text. It's just a single thing. Okay. It says tap, draw a card, then exile a card from your hand and put a number of time counters on it equal to its mana value. It gains. When the last time counter is removed from this card, if it's exiled, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. If you cast a creature spell this way, it gains haste until end of turn. Then remove a time counter from each other card you own in exile. So this reminds me a lot of Joyra, obviously, the original one. But however, that one was red, blue. I believe this is green and blue. So what do we think about suspend, basically, which is the mechanic that he's doing here?
Yeah, so it's an interesting mechanic because at base level, by tapping, even if you can't use the ability, it's basically looting. You draw and then you exile a card with time counters and then hopefully you'll get it later.
Yeah, but, and you remove a time counter from each other card that's already in exile. So at the very base minimum, even if you don't have a card, you have 0 cards in hand, but you have 3 cards that have time counters in exile, you might still definitely tap this, draw a card, and exile a card.
Yeah, at least you're getting something out of it.
Yeah. So this is interesting because these are not cards with suspend, so they will not lose those time counters with each upkeep as typical with suspend. So that's actually a big downside, I think.
Yeah, so whenever you suspend a card, it'll automatically... Well, whenever you suspend a card using a card that has the suspend mechanic, it will remove a time counter from the upkeep, and then it's like you're paying time instead of mana for the card.
Yeah,
and then once all those counters are gone, then you cast it for free. If it's a creature, it has haste.
Yep, and obviously the reason that this is powerful in Joyra is that you can suspend Eldrazi, other huge spells, and you're cheating the mana cost when it comes out.
Yeah, cheating mana cost is very powerful, but this is a little bit more difficult because it takes the mana cost into account.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. It is equal to its mana value, so you're not going to be able to do an Eldrazi, otherwise you're going to get 11 time counters or whatever when you put it out there.
Which you could do. So whenever you suspend a card, like normally, so say you have an Aeon Chronicler and you suspend that normally, not using this commander's ability, you will still get those time counters removed whenever you do activate that ability.
Yeah, yeah. So Aeon Chronicler draws you a card every time a time counter is removed from it. So this may be one that you either suspend from your hand or you use your commander to suspend, which seems a little better. And then with all these other cards, you're drawing cards. Yay! suspend, though, I think in general is a pretty weak mechanic and commander.
Yeah,
upkeeps do not happen very often because it's one for every four turns instead of one per turn. So a card like Reality Strobe, which is you can spend it for three time counters for two in the blue, or you can pay four blue to play it to return a permanent to its owner's hand, and then you resuspend it. So paying six for this sucks.
Yeah, don't do that.
Paying three and waiting three turns also sucks.
But if you have stuff like this commander, as well as some other synergies to like remove those time counters, you could bounce something,
yeah,
get it suspended immediately again, and then start removing those time counters again, and then maybe during your next upkeep, it already removes the last counter, you can cast it again, so yeah, there's some synergy there.
Some synergy, but here's the thing, if you suspend Reality Strobe with Alando's tap ability, it puts six time counters on it, as opposed to paying three to put three time counters on it.
Yes.
So there are a lot of downsides with what Alando's doing. There are, however, a bunch of other suspend cards that we've seen a lot of. Ancestral Vision is sort of the big one that's played in Legacy formats. I've never seen Soul Talisman played in a single game of Commander. Have you?
Yes, I played it and it was bad, and so I took it out immediately.
Yeah, suspend. But here's the thing, this card actually, I believe, because the mana value is zero, will instantly come into play, correct?
No.
So, never mind.
That's the dumb part about these zero mana cards, is that you'll suspend them and they will be in exile with zero time counters on them.
So it'll never come back.
It'll never come back because it cares about the last time counter being removed.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It says when the last is removed, cast without paying its mana cost.
So that's what suspend or this commander cares about. It cares about that last counter being removed, not necessarily whether it has no counters on it.
So both Ancestral Vision and Soul Talisman are not good things to exile from your hand when you use Alando then.
Yes, don't do that.
Wow. So I didn't even realize that. That is a big...
They are probably still cards that you want to include because of the suspend synergy. You're already in that as it is, but please do not suspend an Ancestral Vision and expect it to work with this commander.
Yeah, you're going to be playing all the other remove, suspend, counters cards, but you do not want to suspend those cards with the commander because it'll just stay stuck at zero.
Yeah, but notably, you don't necessarily want to use cards like Clock Spinning a ton because they don't work with Alundo. Because Alundo does not suspend cards. It only exiles them, puts time counters on it. It's not actually suspend. It is something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
They will not work with Alundo's ability.
Well, thanks for telling me.
You're welcome.
Obviously, I think the thing that really breaks this deck open is the ability to untap Alundo a bunch.
Yeah.
And then each turn rotation, you can use him four times. And hooray, maybe you've cast one card at the end of it. So Seedborn Muse and Dramatic Reversal. Now, if you play Dramatic Reversal, people will be asking, are you going to go infinite? Probably not. But those, any 1,000-year Elixir, these are like Josh Lee Kwai specials, right? Kiro's Follower, Freed from a Reel are all ways to untap this card and play it over and over again.
Yeah, and it's probably the best way to remove the suspend counters because there's not a lot of stuff that interacts with the suspend counters. It's like a couple of things from Time Spiral, and that's about it.
I think the best part is that you get to draw a card every single time with Alando, and you are exiling one, you're basically looting, but we've seen this effect very similarly on like Bag of Holding and all that, where you're exiling the cards that you're drawing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So just that card advantage alone seems pretty good. If you put in just the cards we mentioned here, you're going to have a pretty good engine to keep going. And then I think it's just depending, just sort of what do you want to suspend and how do you want to play the Alando game?
Yeah, I think the strategy can be good, but it is slow.
Yeah.
And given how fast Commander's gotten recently, like, I don't know if it'll keep up, but it's definitely interesting.
It's interesting. I think this card would be pretty good and limited.
Definitely. Loot every turn and still cast the crap.
Yeah,
I like that a lot.
How would you build Alando? Would you go big spells or like small value?
I think middle of the road value is exactly where you want, because small spells like doesn't get you what you want as much. But if you have like those 4 and 5 mana things, then you feel good like untapping multiple times and powering those out.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Alando. You were unfortunately a little unimpressive.
Oh.
Moving on, though, we got a bunch more really interesting creatures. Why don't you read this next one, Murph?
All right. Asterion the Decadent. It is a 4WB legendary creature, vampire, elf, rogue.
All three.
It's got Death Touch and Lifelink. At the beginning of your end step, choose one. you can either have target opponent lose life equal to the amount of life that they lost this turn, or you can have, or you can gain life, excuse me, equal to the amount of life you gained this turn.
Cool. So this is a 4/4 Death Touch lifelink. If you swing with it, you're going to deal 4 damage, and then at the beginning of your end step, you can say feed, and you're going to make Murph lose 4 life equal to the amount of life they've lost this turn just from you doing. Or you can be like, I gained 4 life, I'm going to gain that much life.
Yeah.
So he's definitely decadent. He's going both sides of it. All right, so how do we break this open?
Okay, so probably the more powerful part to build around is the part that has an opponent lose life, because honestly, if you're paying 6 mana for your commander, you don't want to just gain double life.
Yeah.
It's probably not the best thing to be doing. However, one-shotting your opponents is a lot of fun, and this commander can help you do that with things like Quietus Spike.
Yeah.
Blood Tribute. Like, these types of cards, which are a ton of fun, because they will make the opponent lose half their life. So then once they've lost half their life, then... yeah, the commander will trigger, make them lose exactly another how much half. Life they lost, which is half their life. So as long as they're at an even life total, they just die.
Yep. And if you hit them with your commander as well, that's going to be definitely going to do it, because you're dealing that damage. So yeah, you have Quietus Spike, Blood Tribute, Scythe Claw. These are always to do it. It's so hard to do this in commander. The moment that you play an equipment like Scythe Claw or Quietus Spike, everyone goes, okay, now I am never letting you attack me again, or a lot of deals get made. Blood Tribute Blood Tribute seems really good in this deck, because it's got a kicker cost of tapping an untapped vampire you control, and maybe you're building Vampire Tribal to just get lots of life loss, right?
I mean, guess who is already a vampire?
Your commander. He's also an elf and a rogue.
And an elf and a rogue.
That's actual decadence.
But that's synergy right there.
Yeah, that is synergy. The one-shot life loss, I think, is definitely where you want to be. There's also, like, Warlock class that does the same thing, and Wound Reflection is probably what people are thinking of most.
Yeah, it's basically another one of those, and so you probably want to double up on those types of effects.
Yeah. I really like Temporal Extortion in this deck, because maybe they'll actually let you take the extra turn.
Yeah, so Temporal Extortion, not a card that shows up super commonly. It's black, 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 so 4 black mana. When you cast it, any player may pay half their life rounded up if a player does counter Temporal Extortion, but you take an extra turn after this one.
Yeah, so it's a black...
black extra turn spell.
Extra turn spell, yeah, you rarely see this. But if someone pays the extra life, you could just then go, okay, well, my commander's out, end step, you die.
Yep.
So someone may not want to do that, or they have to hold up removal for your commander so that that trigger does not ever go on the stack before they get to
it. But the good thing about Temporal Extortion is you get an extra turn, which means you get an extra end step, which is exactly what your commander wants to be doing.
Yeah. That's a great point. So no matter what, that next turn, maybe you can play the Quietus Spike out of your hand. You have a double way to kill someone.
Yep.
This definitely seems like the kind of card that I would never play.
I don't think I'd play it either, honestly. It seems a little bit... I think the lose half life plan makes the deck a little bit too mean, and the life gain makes the deck a little bit too meh.
Yeah,
it's like, it's a 6 mana legendary creature in black and white. There's already other options for black white life gain.
Now, I could see this in a deck that plays it as one of its finishers.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's like really important thing to think about, which is you can have cards in there that you like. A lot of these cards may fit better in the 99. Even Alondo might be better in the 99 of certain decks, because if you're going the life gain route, you're playing, like, you know, all the Soul Sisters. You're playing the Sanguine Bond Exquisite Blood combo. Maybe you have Aetherflux Reservoir to another win con. Grey Merchant of Asphodel, another great win con in this sort of deck. It seems like, I don't know, it feels very on rails. You're either trying to kill them one way or the other. And it doesn't, for me personally, why I wouldn't play this is it doesn't feel like it has much other routes to victory.
It doesn't have much overlap with its two abilities, honestly, the life gain and the dealing damage to opponents. And it is pretty linear. It doesn't really bring anything new to the table, especially in the life gain strategy.
There's plenty of life gain decks. So I think this, you could maybe see this into an interesting deck that just, you know, even in an Edgar Markov deck, maybe this is your win con, because you're swinging with, you know, 10 whatever 2/2s and you're doing a ton of damage, and you play this on your second main, they go, oh crap, you took over half my life this turn, it's game over.
Yep. And it's a vampire, so it synergizes very well in decks like that.
Yeah. So I could see that sort of being the case with Asterion. Definitely a very decadent card. All right, next up we got
Baba Lasaga.
Night Witch. This is a great name for a card. Definitely based on some folktales, I believe. 1 black and a green, 3/3 legendary creature, human warlock. Tap, sacrifice up to 3 permanents. If there were three or more card types among the sacrifice permanents, each opponent loses three life, you gain three life, and you draw three cards.
That seems pretty neat.
This is very neat. So this is a three mana commander, and it has a lot of value stacked on this. So the big question is, how do you get three card types amongst up to three permanents? Ideally, you're not sacrificing all three permanents to get three. You're not doing a one land, one creature, one artifact. You're looking instead for cards that do twice as much.
Yeah, that was the thing that I missed initially when reading the card. It says that you sacrifice up to three permanents. So you, if you have one that fits all the categories, mm-hmm. then you can just sacrifice that one. I don't believe there's anything that fits
I don't
all those categories.
Think so.
But there's a lot that fit two of those categories.
Yeah. So Solemn Simulacrum is the easiest one that comes to mind. It's a creature and an artifact. So in this way, you get to have two of those current permanents, and not to mention you also draw a card from Solemn. There's lots of cards like that that are creature artifacts. Ornithopter of Paradise does the same thing.
They'll probably be playing things like that anyway in your commander deck.
Yeah, especially Solemn. I still play Solemn. A lot of people don't anymore. Mycosynth Lattice, if you want to make everything an artifact. I don't know if this is the direction you want to go, but I could see a black-green, like, super artifact matters deck.
I mean, that'd be cool, because if you had Mycosynth Lattice out and something that was an enchantment creature as well, boom, yeah. Sacrifice that enchantment creature, and that's only one thing you have to sacrifice.
That's right. You just need to add one subtype to it.
Yep.
So, yeah, if you had Destiny Spinner, which is an enchantment creature, Courser of Kruphix.
Jamie Wong favorite.
I don't know if you want to sacrifice these, because, I mean, Courser especially, it's a very good card.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of enchantment creatures out there. Nightmare Shepherd's a great one, because anytime that another non-token creature you control dies, you may exile and you create a token that's a copy of that creature. So you're getting rid of a creature, but you're still getting a replacement for it each time, which seems kind of nice.
Yeah, you're sacrificing creatures and things anyway in this deck, so yeah. That seems like a good include.
Yeah. Of course, there's the... One Truck helps us make these outlines. He always includes some of his special ideas.
Hey, I picked most of these out. Thank
oh,
you
did?
Very much.
Okay, all right. Well, then tell me about
how... I got some of them.
Tell me how we're getting weird then.
Okay.
Because this is the subtitle for this.
Bitter Blossom. All right. Okay. Hear me out. One card. It provides a creature, right?
Yep.
And it's a tribal enchantment. Now, tribal is very weird because it's not a super type. Like snow or legendary,
right?
It is a type. It's just a regular old type. You can see that in like the text of Tarmogoyf, where it says tribal is a type.
So that means that if you sacrifice Bitter Blossom, you're actually getting two.
Yes.
Ah, so you can play Bitter Blossom, and then your commander is out. Let's say the next turn you make that fairy, you sacrifice Bitter Blossom and the fairy. I don't think you should do this, but you'll get all three permanent types just like that.
You draw three cards. And, why would you not want to do that?
And everyone loses three life, and you gain three life. There you go.
Yeah, you get your life back from the Bitter Blossom anyway. I just like cards like these because they do what your deck wants to be doing anyway, which is making bodies that you're probably going to want to sacrifice because this seems like it's a sacrifice deck.
Yeah, I'd say in the worst case scenario, it's like, crap, I need to do this. I'll sack the Bitter Blossom as well.
Exactly.
It wasn't doing enough for me, but I've gotten the creatures out of it. And I've got everything I need.
Yeah, you got stuff like Dryad Arbor, which is a land creature.
Yep.
Because land's a type, creature's a type.
Yep. I really like this next one, Urza's Saga.
Yeah.
Because it is going to sacrifice itself, and you can actually sacrifice it before then, it also makes you an artifact creature with the constructs. So it kind of really does everything here, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, so what you can do is, on Chapter 3 for Urza's Saga, you can put the ability on the stack,
uh-huh.
and then sacrifice the Urza's Saga in response to this commander's ability.
So you still get to tutor.
You'll still tutor, and then Urza's Saga got sacrificed to something else other than its regular old sacrifice.
Yeah, there you go. I also like this with a lot of the cards that have Blitz on them.
Oh, yeah.
Because they say this card gains the text when this permanent dies, you draw a card.
Yeah, and it's going to get sacrificed anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So that's another interesting way to look at this, is that maybe you have cards that are going to get sacked anyway. You're not sacking them to like a Viscerous Seer or whatever, but now you can get some extra value out of it. Okay. Whip of Erebos. This is another Let's Get Weird card. I like this one as well. This is a legendary enchantment artifact. You really don't see this very often.
No. Yeah, I think you literally only see it in the God's Weapons from the original Theros.
And this is great in this deck because obviously you're throwing things to the graveyard, so you're going to want to be able to get them back. So the Whip does that already and provides you, in the case that you need it, maybe you're even going to win with the activation of Babala Saga. You're willing to sack these things out of the way.
Yep, that's the best deck building tip that I can give. Instead of being like, I'm going to go find every single thing that is a creature and an enchantment and throw it into the deck.
Yeah.
Find stuff that is already synergizing with your deck that also has multiple types.
Yep, I like that a lot. And then because you're probably sacrificing a lot of lands, the artifact lands as well also count as artifact and lands.
Yep.
You're going to probably play that package. It's the Crucible of Worlds, Ramming Up Excavator, Gitrog Monster, all ways for you to get your lands back from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yep.
And then you're really in for it, right? Because now you're drawing three cards, sacking a land. Maybe you're playing cards that let you play more than one land.
Mm-hmm.
Your Dryad of the Elysian Grove is another great enchantment creature, and you're going to play another land. You can play it out of your graveyard. So I could see this deck doing one of those great 20-minute turns, especially if you get like an untapper in there too for Babala Saga.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And it's only three mana, so this card seems like a lot of value. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I like it a lot too. Notably, the card that does not cost four or six mana so far is our favorite, and it still says the thing where you get to draw cards on it.
We like drawing cards.
Yep. All right, next up we got Brain, Lord of Darkness. I'm not the only one that's going to do that. This is Esper, one white, blue, and black for a 5/2 legendary creature god. This one's actually pretty interesting.
Yeah.
As long as your life total is less than or equal to half your starting life total, uh-oh, don't play Asterion, Bane, Lord of Darkness has Indestructible. So in Commander, it needs to be at 20 or less than Bane against Indestructible. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, target opponent may have you draw a card. If they don't, you may put a creature card with equal or lesser toughness from your hand onto the battlefield. Bane has a toughness of 2. So at first I was like, oh yeah, we're cheating in big crazy stuff. No, actually you are not, unless you're able to increase the toughness. But let's get sort of into the card here. So you could play this with obviously every sack outlet you can.
Yes.
Because you want to sacrifice things for value. So you got your Phyrexian, Ashnod's, Viscera Seer.
And you want to do it on demand.
On demand, yeah. Yes, just like my favorite cable TV networks.
Remember cable TV?
Yeah, cable TV. On demand.
Those were the days.
Everyone's like, on demand, I can watch this whenever I want. It's like, yeah, you can do that now as well with the internet.
Remember when Netflix, they just shipped DVDs to your house?
If you were alive, or if you had DVDs shipped to your house from Netflix, please leave a comment below and let us know what DVD you got, because I love DVDs, man. They had special features.
Yeah.
They had commentaries. You don't get that anymore. You don't get that. I mean, some of the streaming networks will allow you to like watch some behind the scenes and stuff.
Yeah, like The Mandalorian, stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
Okay, we're getting off track, Jimmy.
Okay, so
back to cards.
All right, low toughness tribal is what a lot of people are sort of looking at, because there are obviously ways to get the toughness up on your commander if you want to.
Yes.
But that requires to add in probably like 6 to 8 other cards in your deck just to do that, and then you're building around that, and then when you draw only none of those cards and you have the high toughness in your hand, it's gonna be tough.
Yeah.
So let's start with low toughness tribal. So some cards to get back. I really like Woe Strider.
I love Woe Strider.
This card is just, I think, this card's super high up in my book in general. It has so much value.
Because yeah. If it gets milled or dies or anything, you can get it right back.
Yep, you can escape
it. It's a body when it comes into play. Like,
yep,
it's really good.
Basically, Viscera Seer's text as well, but it creates the body with it that you can sacrifice.
Yep.
Now, it does say sacrifice another creature. Viscera Seer can sacrifice itself, but why not play both?
Yeah,
they're both low toughness. They'll both get on the battlefield. Woe Strider will make you a goat, and you can sack it, and then if you ever do need to escape it later, you can. Lots of other cards here that are really good. Sakura Tribe Elder, if you could play it in this deck. You can't, unfortunately.
Oh.
Reassembling Skeleton, though. I like that. Yeah, I mean, if you could put this in, like, maybe you have a 5-color, like, good stuff, small things deck, you could do it. But,
oh, that's true.
But I do like Fleshbag Marauder is a great one.
Marauder, yeah.
Because if you're getting this in, and then you're making everyone sacrifice again, and then you may be able to chain together some combos here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot to do. Now, when it comes to High Toughness Tribal, I don't think you want to do this.
You could do it. It's not completely out of the question. The biggest issue, I think, with this commander is that it gives your opponents a choice.
Yeah.
And giving your opponents a choice is usually not that great in commander.
Well, mostly they're going to have you draw the card, right? If you all of a sudden stack a bunch of equipment on this thing, you're at half life total. So Bane is just like a, you know, like he's like a 7/4 or a 9/6 or something. And then you're like, all right, cool, I'm going to sacrifice a creature trigger.
Well, let's see. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, target opponent may have you draw a card. If they don't, you may put a creature card equal or lesser toughness. Lesser toughness than the creature that died, or lesser toughness than Bane?
Oh, lesser toughness than the creature that died.
Than the creature that died.
Yeah, yeah. So, but even then, if that's happening, people are probably like, eh.
I mean, you could do it. You could fill your deck with stuff like walls on the low ends, stem the bleeding, and then be like, are you sure you want this to die? Are you sure you want this to
I would sacrifice? Just have you draw the card.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you build it like wall tribal with like some big demons or stuff,
yeah,
on
wall
the top
shards,
end,
wall of junk, all these weird walls.
Yeah. Yeah, if you build it like that, then people will just have you draw the card. And if you play it with the low toughness thing, people will just have you get the creature back, or put a creature back into play.
Yeah, yeah. So I think with Bane, like, you can obviously play this. I think I would rather play it with aristocrats type stuff.
Yeah, probably, because what aristocrats cares about is it just cares about bodies.
Yeah.
And so that way, instead of, well, the body goes away, well, now I get another body on the board immediately.
Yeah, and you're going to get some people draining. You're already sacrificing things anyway.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't think I would want to go the full Bane plus weird walls route, because then, again, people just have you draw the card. Not the worst thing in the world, but you are still losing a creature to do so, and then you're losing that toughness, so that maybe the card that you wanted to put out with it, oh crap, I can't, you know, even though I have this weird 0/8 that just died. That's my only 0/8.
Yeah.
So now I'm stuck with all these cards in my
hand. Yeah, if you got like a big 7-mana demon in your hand, and you're like, I really want to cheat this up, but they're like, no, you draw the card.
Yeah, so I think...
Then what do you do?
I think, yeah, sorry, I misspoke about Bane being really big. Bane's toughness can stay low, but I think you want to be just doing Woe Strider, Fleshback Marauder type stuff and just going nuts.
Yeah, I don't love this card, honestly.
Well, thanks for telling me.
You're welcome.
You could also... I like this other direction, which is like you could play Athreos, God of Passage, and
ding,
do
ding,
a
ding.
Lot of sacrificing and make... And now it's like, crap, do I have you draw a card or put a creature out? Or pay 3 life to get the card back in your hand, and now you're really starting to get them low.
Yeah, the cool thing about something like Athreos is you can stack the triggers, and so you can be like, great, I'm going to have Athreos resolve first.
Yep.
Can I get this back to my hand? If they say yes, you can be like, great, it has the exact same amount of toughness, because Bane cares about less than or equal to. So you can have the exact same creature get bounced back to your hand
over and over again.
And then, yeah, you put that back into play. But again, people can just stop that loop by saying, now you draw a card.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, giving choices, again, as we've seen in Commander, not always the best. All right, next up we got Ball, Lord of Murder. So this is 2 a black, red, and a green for a legendary creature god. It's a 4/4. As long as your life total is less than or equal to half your life total, Ball has indestructible. So very similar to Bane's text.
Mm-hmm.
But the second one is a line of text is whenever another non-token creature you control dies, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature and goad it. Okay, so we're going to have a very similar conversation that we just had to Bane. So you want non-tokens to die, and then you're going to put +1/+1 counters on other creatures, and then you're going to goad it. So not great if you're doing this to yourself, because then your creatures have to attack.
Yeah, probably not what you want to be doing.
But also not great if you're doing it to someone else's creature, because you're making it bigger, but it doesn't attack you.
Yeah.
But it only happens for that one turn. So the next time it comes around, if you don't goad it again, it's going to come swinging at you. So instant speed goad, you want to control it. Same package. Phyrexian Altar, Ashnod's Altar, Viscerous Seer.
Psych outlets, because you want to be able to goad at instant speed. So if they play something very, very scary, give it haste, or it has haste, something, you'd be like, all right, fine, I'll sacrifice my something or rather, goad that, it can't one-shot me.
Yeah, it's great if someone drops a Kozilek or any sort of like crazy creature out early. You can have Ball basically stop them in their tracks. Now this is where you want to play Sacred Tribelder. I misspoke earlier. So
yes.
This is a creature that wants to die. When it dies, you can put a +1/+1 counter on something and goad it. Reassembling Skeletons, same thing. You can do this over and over and over again. There's a lot of creatures in Jund that will just have tons of value, that when they come in, you've got the value, you can just get rid of them. And you also have cards like Caustic Caterpillar that you can use to kill something, and then that's going to trigger Ball. So, and again, Fleshback Marauder, more things. I feel like we're talking about the same card all of a sudden.
Yeah, it feels like these are the same types of cards.
Fleshback, well, they're both like, gods, so.
Yeah, Fleshback I kind of like because it not only sacrifices itself, but also clears the board. So clears the way for whatever big thing you're trying to goad.
Yeah.
So it will help like clear the board, and so then the thing that you're trying to goad will actually get some damage through on your opponents instead of trying to like wait and maybe have a couple creatures ram into each other. It's way more fun to, you know, have players' life totals go down to see some creatures just get removed.
Yeah, it's interesting. You could probably, I mean, how many creatures would you say on average you get out in the game? Like, let's just take a random
average
snapshot in, like, it's turn 6. How many creatures are on your board in a typical Murph game?
Like 3.
Yeah, probably I would say like about 3 to 5. And if you play Fleshbag and then you get rid of one of those creatures and then you go to another one, that's almost removing someone's entire board for that turn. Not to mention it will leave them open for attacks from other people. So
that's very true.
I think goad at instant speed is much better than like your just, I'm going to play this card and goad everything once.
Yeah.
So you do have a little more flexibility there. And then the entire like make everyone else attack theme has been around for quite a bit. Thantis the Warweaver does it. Carter Doomscourge is just such a pain in the butt card every time I play against it. Yeah.
It's a fun card. You'll have a fun time not being able to keep creatures around.
Yeah, but you've got Karazhakar, the Eye Tyrant that also does it. Geode Ranger. This is a bit slower because it's a 6 mana on landfall. Yeah,
but very powerful.
But very, very powerful, yeah.
One thing that I do like is something like Toski, because it has to attack each turn anyway.
Oh, okay.
So you can start stacking things on top of your Toski, and people will definitely not want to block it then. And you are removing blockers by goading other things as well, which means your Toski is a lot more likely to get through.
Yeah, and Toski is indestructible, so it's going to be like a 5-5 at a certain point swinging in. People don't want to block it, and you're just going to draw a card. So I actually like that quite a bit. So maybe you want to go that route just a little bit more.
Yeah, stuff that has to attack anyway.
Has to attack, or you're forcing everyone to tap down. You're controlling every combat, so you don't mind attacking as well, because you know you're not going to get hit back.
Yep.
Okay, moving on. Thanks, Ball, Lord of Murder.
Ball.
More like Lord of Sacrifice, though, to be honest.
Very true.
Okay, we got Kadira, Caller of the Small. Want to read it, Murph?
Sure. It's a 1GW legendary creature, Orc Ranger. It's got trample, and when it deals combat damage to a player, for each token you control, make a 1/1 white rabbit creature token.
And it's a 3/3. A white rabbit? We haven't seen rabbits before.
Have we?
I don't think
so. Yeah, I don't think so.
I would have.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I was born in 87. I'm Year of the Rabbit, so I'm like...
So you would know.
I would know, yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't born Year of the Squirrel, you know. So yeah, Kadira is definitely the Caller of the Small. So it's interesting because it's whenever Kadira deals combat damage to a player for each token you control.
Yes.
So this kind of feels like a doubling season type effect because you're basically 2xing whatever tokens you have on the battlefield.
Yeah. Kadira can definitely be powerful, but does have a two-step process of... You got to deal combat damage first.
Yeah.
And you also already have to have tokens out on the battlefield, which is not that tall of an order, especially for a 3-mana commander.
Yeah, especially in green-white as well. So Kadira obviously is 3-3 with trample. It's going to be able to do some combat damage early on, but really this gets powerful later on when you're able to use your Risk the Redeemed or Avenger of Zendikar or Scoot Swarm to make, you know, 50 tokens or whatever. But yes, at that point...
Scoot Swarm also needs rabbits added to the mix.
I was going
to
say...
That's what we need.
At that point, you're already kind of winning though, right?
Yeah.
So Kadira is in this interesting spot where it seems great for maybe a one-on-one hyper aggro, get tokens out, make a bunch quickly, but doesn't seem amazing for a multiplayer game when at a certain point, Kadira will never be able to get through.
Yeah, I think she lives in a very particular place where she thrives with token doublers.
Yeah.
Because you're making that initial token, doubling that ideally, and then she is looking at how many tokens you have and then doubling that again.
Right. Right.
So then your board just gets very massive very quickly as long as you have your commander, a token doubler, and something that makes tokens, which is not a tall order.
Yeah. So I do think, though, Kadira is probably better in the 99
probably.
Of a Rhys deck. In the 99 of any green-white tokens deck. Because if you get this out early and you just, you know, it's kind of acting similarly to some of the best cards in the deck, like Parallel Lives, Anointed Procession,
yeah.
Second Harvest. So I think... Kadira is really interesting as not necessarily the commander.
Yeah, I think another interesting tidbit is that it doesn't say creature token.
Oh, that's token. Right. For each token you control. So that includes...
Treasures, clues, food, any type of token that you can possibly get your hands on. You'll make a white rabbit for that.
Okay, yeah. And of course, obviously, Parallel Lives and stuff cares about just tokens as well. Same with Anointed Processions. So Smothering Tide seems nuts in this deck.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, it's already a very good card, but let's say you have 10 treasures. You hit someone with Kadira, you get 10 rabbits.
That's instant board state. Instant
board state.
And then all you gotta do is cast something that makes them big. Win profit done.
Wow,
this token is how decks. You play commander, folks.
I've never seen that before in this game. True Conviction or Concerted Effort both seem like ways to get your tokens in and doing a lot of damage. You can give them Double Strike and Lifelink with True Conviction, or you can give them all flying, and then if you combine Concerted Effort with True Conviction, then everything just gets nuts powerful. But
and you just win the game.
Yeah, you should just win the game. And cast a Chroma's Will too while you're at it, and maybe a Crater Hoof Behemoth. Okay.
Play a Crater Hoof. Win game.
Yeah, so I also think, you know, if you are going to go full on Kadira as your commander, you want to get that damage in. So maybe this is more Voltron-y in that you can use Fire Shrieker, Bloodforge, Battle Axe.
I like stuff like Fire Shrieker because it gives Kadira double strike, and so you get that combat damage trigger twice.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So if you have a couple tokens out in the battlefield, well, now you're getting another three tokens, and then another three tokens.
Okay.
And something like Bloodforged Battleaxe is also cool because it makes token copies of itself.
And then those tokens count towards Kadira's thing.
Exactly. So you're taking the Bloodforged Battleaxe, put it on Kadira, and then start attacking with her, and then it's making the tokens, so it makes her bigger, so she's more likely to get through, and it's also making more tokens.
Yeah, so you can stack the triggers, make the token, and then Kadira counts the tokens. Yeah,
exactly.
I think you definitely want to play, if you have them, the Sword Ofs in this deck, because giving Kadira protection means you probably almost always will have a player to swing against.
Yeah, that's kind of a given. Yeah. Play Sword of Feast and Famine in your commander deck.
Hot tech.
The command zone.
What's your second favorite sword?
Second favorite sword? Just generically, I think Fire and Ice.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I've been a little disappointed with the two swords that have been printed recently, Hearth and Home, and then...
Hearth and Home is good. I like Hearth and Home.
I think it's just too slow.
Hmm.
And green-white, as powerful as that is, a lot of times, you will not be able to swing against someone with it because they'll have something that can block it.
Yeah. I do think Sword of the Animus is better than Sword of Hearth and Home because it's on attack, not on combat damage, which is a critical thing that I missed when I first saw Sword of Hearth and Home. This is just... better in almost every way. It only costs one more mana to play.
Sword and Hearth and Home is for all of the flicker addicts like me out there that goes, oh my gosh, I can do it now. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a sword that does it. Wow, yeah. It's a little too slow. All right, so that is the first half of the part one of the Commander Legends Baldur's Gate multicolored commander review. We've got more crazy creatures on the way, but stick around because first we must hear from our mid-roll sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, we are back talking about the multicolored cards, creatures specifically, legendary creatures specifically from Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate. Say that 10 times fast.
What a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. All right, next up we got Commander Liara Porter. Well, they just put Commander in the name.
Oh, wow. They don't even care. One has to be a commander. If this is in your 99, it's a flavor fail.
It is
you can't do it.
Massive flavor fail, yeah. 3 a red and a white for a 5/3 human soldier. Whenever you attack, spells you cast from exile this turn cost X less to cast, where X is the number of cards being attacked. No, sorry. Where X is the number of players being attacked. Exile the top X cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may cast spells from among those exiled cards. Goodness gracious.
That's so much text.
Yeah, so
and it does a thing, I guess, probably, maybe.
Yeah, it definitely does a thing. And okay, so it's on attack.
Yes.
And if you attack 3 players, that's going to be equal to X is equal to 3. So your spells you cast from exile cost 3 less to cast. And then you also exile the top 3 cards from your library. And until end of turn, you can cast spells from among those exiled cards. So it kind of does everything in one package. Hooray. Can red and white play lost spells from exile, Murph?
Yeah, it can. Red, specifically, does that quite a bit. So again, this is one of those commanders that is also a two-step process, which honestly, I like more than one-step processes.
Yeah, and it says whenever you attack non-combat damage, so you're going to get that trigger. And also, notably, Liara Porter does not need to be the one attacking. This is similar. We've seen this on like Adelin, Resplendent Cathar. All these newer cards just say when you attack, which I think is a much better design for commander.
Yeah, so really what you want to do is have creatures, which in a Boros deck is not that tall of an order. And then you also need stuff that synergizes with exiling cards from the top of your deck.
Yep, and you want to ideally attack more than one player each combat so that you get X to the maximum amount and you get the maximum amount of spell reduction cost as well.
Yeah, so there's stuff like Belborca or Lelia.
The Blade Reforged, yeah, Lelia is really good.
That was really cool, because you're going to be playing ideally lots of things from the top of your deck anyway, or just from exile in general.
Yeah, Impulsive Draw on Belborca at your upkeep, and it says you may play that card this turn, so you're going to get a land from that. Yep. Or you can wait until you attack, and then that card you're playing is going to cast even less.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, you have March of Reckless Joy and Reckless Impulse are both very good, and they do the same thing.
Yeah, so there's lots of cards in reds. You can look at any Prosper deck and see what type of stuff that you have that can exile from the top of your deck and then play it until the end of your turn, end of your next turn, end of whenever. There's plenty of cards that do that
end
in
of
Magic
the game?
These days. Play this until the end of the game. There's some stuff that does that.
Yeah, and then if you want to get attacking on everyone, then that's when you're going to play Adeline. You're going to play Hero of Bladehold, Blade of Selves.
Yeah, I like stuff like Hero of Bladeholds or Blade of Selves because it will get those attack triggers in. Because with Blade of Selves, it's a little bit wonky.
Yeah, so Myriad, right? Whenever a equipped creature attacks each opponent other than defending player, for each opponent other than defending player, you may create a token that's a copy of that creature that's tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker they control. So that will trigger Commander Liara Porter's ability.
Because it just says whenever you attack, and then count everything.
Yeah.
So it's, okay, well, I'm going to attack Myriad trigger, get all those tokens. I did attack. How many things do I have attacking different players? 3.
Yep. So a lot of times that is a very sort of tricky scenario, and you won't actually get the full thing because they enter the battlefield tapping and attacking, and that doesn't count towards other triggers. But in terms of Liara Porter, it does. Hooray. Also noted that this is fantastic in the 99 Evishin Two Heavens as one.
Yes. But
now you get double the triggers.
Yeah. That's
the reduce
good.
Of mana. The reduction of mana is going to be a lot.
And she's exiling stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So you're getting like, what, 6 things to exile? And Isshin, you're already probably spreading the damage anyway, so...
Yep. Yeah.
But then you're missing out on the cool flavor of having her be your commander when she's called
Commander
Liara Porter. Yeah. So
I might have to leave the table if you're playing Isshin and then you play Commander Liara Porter. I'll go like,
sorry.
This is unacceptable.
Sorry, can't do that.
Yeah,
I'm going to go find another pod.
Yeah. That would be really bummer. I would never do that. All right. Let's read the next one. It's another Boros card.
Ooh.
It's not a commander, though.
Duke Older Ravenguard. 4 red whites.
It's a duke.
That's a duke. Legendary creature. Human noble soldier. They put lots of creature types on cards these days.
Indeed. And I don't think... Does anything ever care about nobles?
We should do Noble Tribal now.
Noble Tribal.
We're going to build Noble Tribal now.
How about no?
At the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gains haste and myriad until end of turn.
All right, play Duke Older in Commander Liara. They do look like they belong on the same battlefield. They probably have flavor connection. So yeah, at the beginning of combat on your turn, another creature gains haste and myriad. So haste is great. Myriad is also very good. We play Blade of Selves just because it gives a creature myriad.
Yes. So, and you play stuff like Lightning Greaves just because it gives haste. So you put those together, put that in your command zone. It does cost 6 mana, but that is a very powerful effect.
Yeah, it's 6 mana, however, so not great. Notably, separate instances of Myriad will stack. So if you equip a creature with Blade of Selves and you give it Myriad, that it has 2 instances of Myriad, so it's going to create twice the number of copies.
That's so nutty.
Yeah, so that's pretty nutty. You're going to make a lot of creatures. I like that you get to create multiple creatures that if you can sacrifice them, then you're going to be very happy. Or if they're legendary, then they instantly sacrifice themselves.
Correct.
So you're going to get those triggers. So obviously, the new Dragon Cycle, Atsushi, the Blazing Sky, as well as Ao, the Dawn Sky, are both from Neon Dynasty, and they both have really great dice triggers.
Yeah, because with legendary creatures, you can only have one of them on the battlefield of any particular type.
Mm-hmm.
And so it says, okay, I make 2 additional AOs, and then you say, oh, well, these 2 token copies, they have to die. Sorry.
So sorry.
So then they die. You get the death triggers on both of those, and you can still keep the original one to once again attack next turn.
Yeah, if you have like Yosei, the original... this would be great. You make 2 players skip their untap step.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty,
that's a little mean.
Pretty mean. If you have Zealous Conscripts, you're stealing 2 permanents. I think this would be a really good deck for this sort of like threat and effect sack, because if you are playing cards that, you know, because they're exiled and they have death triggers, you're going to want sack outlets as well.
Yeah.
Sun Titan! Get 2 cards back and then get the whole cycle going again.
Yep.
Pretty good. Mindclaw Shaman is a very interesting card.
I like Mindclaw Shaman. I just want it to work. God
yeah,
dang it.
So it's a 4 and a red 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, an opponent reveals their hand, and you can cast an instant or sorcery from that player's hand without paying its mana cost. Pretty good card, I think. But if you're able to get multiple copies with Myriad and you give it haste, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, because no matter what, as long as you attack with it, Myriad says however many opponents there are, make sure that there's one attack in each opponent. So that means that even if you're in a 6-player pod for some reason,
for some godforsaken reason,
you get to look at everybody's hand and cast an instant or sorcery from everybody's hand, which is a ton of fun.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. Even if you miss on half the players, you're still going to get a bunch of value out of it. Dockside Extortionist, obviously, is the Myriad King, I suppose.
Jimmy, we did it. We broke Dockside.
Oh my gosh. Finally. Paired with a 6-mana commander in red, white, Dockside Extortionist shines the brightest. You could also just go multiple combats to get multiple instances of everything and just really go for the beat them down face, beat them, whatever, however you want to say it. So you got Aggravated Assault. Combat Celebrant, pretty cool. You can, you know, obviously, I don't know if you can exert it as it attacks. No, you can't. No.
Because it's already tapped and attacking.
Yeah, but you will get, no, sorry.
Don't worry about it.
It
doesn't work the way you want it to, but it is a creature in a Boros deck. It's useful, I promise.
Yeah, it's useful, I promise. Same with like Relentless Assault, but again, these are all just good ways to get more combats, more triggers,
yes,
more instances of Haste Myriad, and just go off. Just go nuts.
Yeah.
Just go nuts.
It does seem like a
nuts.
Fun commander. Of all the Boros commanders that care about combat, that seems like near the top of the fun list.
Yep. Can you use Sundial of the Infinite to keep the copies of Myriad?
Yes, you can.
However, it's exiled at the end of combat, so you will not get your second main phase. You got to sort of end your turn pretty early in that case.
Yeah, you got to make sure that everything you want to do is done on first main phase. Beginning or end of combat starts, trigger goes on the stack, end the turn with Sundial of the Infinite. Profit, you get to keep everything.
Wait, there's a second main phase, Murph?
There's a second main phase.
I never play spells in my... I play everything first main phase.
No. That's the fun thing about watching game nights is that I see pros versus like you and Josh will always do combat last. And pros are like, I'm going to go to combat at the very beginning of everything.
Yeah, let's go to combat.
Let's go to combat.
All right, moving on. Let's read this next one.
Oh my gosh.
Go for it, Murph.
All right. I don't know how to say this.
Dinahair.
Invoker Adept. 1, blue, red, white. Legendary creature, human wizard. Haste. You may activate abilities of other creatures you control as though those creatures had haste.
Hey!
And you can tap whenever you next activate an ability this turn by spending 4 or more mana to activate it. Copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy.
Okay, so this has the 1,000-year elixir text as the top, which is you may activate abilities of creatures you control as though those creatures had haste.
Yes.
This is a Jeskai deck, interestingly, and then you want to activate abilities that have 4 or more mana cost to activate it, because then you get to do it twice.
Yes.
So
Tim deck, question mark,
Tim Jeskai deck. Josh, let us know wherever you are.
He likes green too much. He wants the green untap way too much.
Yeah, like, he won't get rid of it. And you can't get, you gotta get Kira's Follower in there.
He wants to play Kira's Follower and Seedborn Muse. He's not gonna go for it, I promise.
However, Chromatic Orrery, Josh Lee Kwai's least favorite card.
I think it's his favorite card.
yeah, it's definitely his favorite card, and Post Malone loves it as well. If you pay 5 mana for Chromatic Orrery, you get to draw a card for each color among permanents you own. So that's at least 6 cards with your commander out. You get to do it twice. That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Lethal Form Engine, though, seems like the kind of card I want to play in this deck.
Exactly.
So you pay this for 4 and it has other abilities, but the 4 mana one is you pay 4, tap it, copy target permanent spell you control, and the copy becomes a token.
Yeah.
So you get to create 2 copies of another spell. This is obviously extremely mana intensive, but it seems like you'd have a really big turn if you did it.
But also, who cares? This is Commander. We can do whatever. We live in magical Christmas land.
Yep. So there's lots of cards that have an over 4 activation cost. Cascading Cataracts, you're going to gain mana positive, finally, because you technically are down the mana if you use this otherwise.
Yep.
Planar Bridge, if you ever activate this...
You get 2 things now?
Yeah, you get 2
sure.
things. Sure. Yeah, great. Chaos Wand is another one. There's also... What's that other Chaos Wand that came in... that's in this set? Editors, check. If it's not there, imagine I never said it. I think this starts getting interesting when you start using cards like... Grim Monolith.
Yeah.
Because you can pay 4 to untap Grim Monolith, but you get to double that ability. So you technically pay 4, get it twice. You untap Grim Monolith, you can tap it in response and then untap it. So you actually get extra mana as a result.
And you're playing Grim Monolith probably anyway, because that happens a lot in Commander.
If you have a Grim Monolith.
If you have a Grim Monolith, you're probably playing it.
But it works really well with this Commander, obviously.
you glossed by this card.
Yeah, I maybe didn't. Well, here's the thing. I'm not sitting next to Josh Lee Kwai. I'm sitting next to Josh Murphy, so I can't say it. Play Mindslaver in
there
this
deck.
There
you go. Mindslaver, baby.
Double it up. Now, instead of just doing it to one time to one player, you get to do it twice. That's pretty good.
Twice to the same player.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do the same
No, you
player.
Want to do two different players, and that'll set you up for success.
Yeah, because you can just go turn, and then there's only one turn in between you and having another turn yourself.
Yeah, assume you're in a four-player game.
Yeah. So those are the obvious sort of like big, crazy four-mana ones, but you can also just use abilities that have X in them and pay that X is equal to four or more. So that's fun.
Yeah.
Because now you get to choose. You can actually pay less than X, earlier if you need to use the card earlier.
Yeah. That's one of the problems with the second ability on this commander, because four mana and tap is kind of a lot.
Yeah.
In order to activate it. But by having X in the cost of these activated abilities, again, like you said, you can do it early, and then later on you could pump even more than four into X and...
You can
doesn't matter, you can still copy it.
Finally, you can find a place to play Heroes Podium, one of the most unplayed card. I've never seen this card played, but
I haven't either. I have like five of these because I started playing like
Theros.
I started playing like Dragon's Maze, but I was like, Born of the Gods pre-release, this is gonna be the best set ever.
My first pre-release was Journey into Nyx. So around the same time, so Heroes Podium is a 5-mana card. Each legendary creature you control gets +1/+1 for each other legendary creature you control, but you can play X and tap to look at the top X cards of your library. You may reveal a legendary creature card from among them and put it into your hand. So you get to do that twice.
Now keep in mind, you do still have to be in like a particular deck to take advantage of this. Probably. No, well, almost certainly.
Almost certainly, yeah. But you could also do like Prototype Portal and Soul Foundry. These are ones that imprint, and then you can pay X to exile those cards. So you just need to have a 4-mana card exiled with that. Candelabra of Taunos
seems really good.
Pay X, untap X target lands. So you could pay X is equal to 4, and you get to untap 8 lands, so you can float all that mana. Seems pretty good.
Or you could do more.
You can go 8. You can go 10. And the nice thing about the commander is that it does not cost any mana to activate Dinah Air's ability. You can just tap Dinah Air to do it.
Yeah. Honestly, though, even though there's all these cool activated abilities that cost 4 or more, you could still totally just build around the fact that it gives your tappers haste.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be just fine.
Yep.
It'll actually be pretty darn good.
Yeah. There's lots of tappers in these colors. And now if you want to just keep untapping stuff, then you've got your drag reversal combos as always. Minamo School at Water's Edge seems like the best land you can put in this deck.
That's a fun one.
You can pay blue, tap it, untap target legendary permanent.
Yep.
So that concludes your commander. The old Vizier of Tumbling Sands, yada, yada, yada.
These are all Josh Lee Kwai cards.
Yeah, Pemmin's Aura, blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah. Tap, untap, tap, untap, untap. Watch me go off, haha, and maybe win.
Draw cards.
Draw cards, do all the good stuff, yes. I think this is interesting. This is the kind of card I like because over time, it can get better and better as more cards are printed. So it's one that you can maybe just sort of have in the back pocket to think about. If you're looking to build a Jeskai deck, and you can just sort of keep an eye out for cards that have the ability to tap for 4 to use the activation cost for 4, and then maybe this will get better over time.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Elminster.
Elminster.
I like this card a lot. I might build Elminster.
Finally,
blue-white does not have good decks.
Remember the last time you built a blue-white deck?
Yeah.
On game nights, and you won on, like, turn 6?
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember that. And then Josh Lee Kwai also discarded the Mana Crypt that game, if you remember. Right?
I don't remember that.
Wasn't it the blue-white the counter spells that cost 0 mana or more?
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
I played that one as well. Yeah.
He discarded a Mana Crypt because he couldn't play it.
And people were like, what are you doing? It's like, no, read the commander. All right. Elminster is 3 blue and a white for a 5 loyalty planeswalker. And it says Elminster can be your commander. Hooray! Woo! Whenever you scry, the next instant or sorcery spell you cast this turn costs X less to cast, where X is the number of cards looked at while scrying this way.
Ooh.
What a weird line of text. Anyway, scry X, next instant or sorcery costs X less, where X is the scry amount. His +2 is draw a card, then scry 2. So you can play Elminster, scry 2 immediately, and then your instant or sorceries cost 2 less. The -3, which you can also do when Elminster comes out, is exile the top card of your library, create a number of 1/1 blue fairy dragon creature tokens with flying equal to that card's mana value. Very nice. So if you're scrying, you can know what's on top of your deck. And then if you exile that card, you can make a bunch of 1/1s.
Also, Elminster can be your commander. Very important.
Yeah. I mentioned that already.
Oh, cool.
Okay. All right. So scry and draw. Let's talk about our favorite scry cards. By the way... The reason that this deck is great is because these cards, if you put it in your deck and you play it, at any point in the game, you will almost never be like, oh, shucks, I have to do this now.
Yeah, I have a preordain. Darn it.
Darn it, scry two, then draw a card.
Didn't want to do that. Yeah, yeah, you do want to do that.
And also, you don't care if Elminster is out. You're happy to do this on turn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all the way to the end of the game.
Gets you what you want, smooths out your draws.
And if Elminster is out, bonus, benefit, hooray.
Exactly.
Yeah, Serum Visions is the opposite draw card than scry two, which is still what great. Elminster says. Yeah, deliberate, scry two, then draw a card. Foresee, scry four, then draw two cards.
Yeah.
And then you have a four mana reduction. You can play Auron's Epiphany for blue.
That's so good.
Yeah, that's why this deck is going to be kind of a meanie, because you could just jam in all those crazy, crazy spells.
Yeah.
Tamiyo's Epiphany is very similar. Ugin's Insight is really good. Scry X, where X is the highest converted mana cost amongst permanent you control, then draw three cards.
So you're going to be scrying five as long as you have Elminster up.
Yeah, pretty good. do you play Treasure Map in this deck? Probably.
Yeah. I think anything that you can get your hands on that scries you, if it's scry one, as long as there's an instance or something that you want to be playing, it will basically pay for itself.
Yeah, I mean, Treasure Map is really good too, because you're in blue-white, so you don't really have a lot of ramp.
Yeah.
So this is pretty good
there. That's true. It is ramp on the flip side.
Yep. Temple of Enlightenment. Typically, these cards, when they come in the battlefield, you scry one, but it's like, ah, oh, shucks, I can't tap that land. Like you just said, now it pays for itself.
Yeah, as long as you're trying to cast an instant or sorcery.
Yeah. Fairy Seer. It's a blue mana. One blue for a 1/1 that when it enters the battlefield, you scry two.
Yeah, scry two.
Pretty good. Mystic Speculation might be the best card in the deck, though.
It's a blue buyback two, and you scry three.
So you can pay the buyback cost by scrying. If Elminster's out, you play Serum Visions. Now you can Mystic Speculation buy back two for just the blue mana, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And then you buy back it, so you can do it again.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
It's pretty darn good.
I've been looking to build an Elegeth Crossroads Augur deck. So this is a 4BB 5/6 legendary creature with partner, but it says if you would scry a number of cards, draw that many cards instead.
Yeah, I think Elminster is probably a little bit more interesting commander.
Certainly. And also, Elegeth, you're just drawing those cards. You're not reducing mana costs, and that's why Elminster is powerful, because if you have Elegeth out, it actually non-bows with Elminster.
Yes.
Because you will no longer be scrying, looking at cards this way. You're actually just drawing them instead.
But also, you have so much scry synergy in the deck as it is.
Yep.
Who cares? You're just drawing a lot of cards.
Yeah, I like that. There's a new interesting enchantment called Netherese Puzzle Ward.
Yeah, this is from Adventures in the Forgotten Realms.
I think so. Or it's from this set, but it may be AFR. So it's 3 and a blue for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, roll a d4, and then you scry X, where X is the result, which is pretty good. And then whenever you roll a die's highest natural result, draw a card. So that's a 25% chance to draw a card. And if Elminster's out, your instants and sorceries cost 4 less. This is very exciting. I am now going to play. Now, let's talk about all the cards you can now play for very cheap if you're able to scry some stuff together.
Yes.
Go for it, Murph.
All right.
Of these cards, which would you play would be the number one add to your deck?
I like Treasure Cruise a lot because it's 8 mana. You can reduce it a lot, and you're still drawing the 3 cards.
Yeah, you can play the scry cards, delve them away, and get the mana reduction.
And it's also very good because you can leave it on top of your deck with Elminster's minus ability and get 8 1/1 flyers.
Yeah, that's the
pretty
wincon,
good,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly what you want to be doing.
Yeah, so you want to cast a Dig Through Time, or you want to scry stuff to the top, or you exile Dig Through Time, make 8 1/1s. Temporal Trespass, you can make 11 1/1s.
Yeah.
Or you can cast this for, like, I don't know, 2 blue and take an extra turn. 5 mana, take an extra turn, by the way, is probably the best rate you're gonna get in Commander.
Still very good.
Yeah, very, very good. Time Stretch.
Time Stretch is so powerful. I usually like the cards like these Delph cards that just don't get stuck in your hand.
Yeah.
Because like with Treasure Cruise, you'll probably still be able to cast it even if
you pay like 4 mana for it.
Yeah, you'll pay 4 mana for it and you'll be fine with it. Yeah, Time Stretch, it doesn't have that possibility of being discounted, but it's just such a powerful card. Like,
yeah,
you're still very happy playing that.
Yeah, I like the fact that you can scry so much, because it's really hard to have a bad opening hand if you have a bunch of scry effects in your hand, because you know that you're going to get to whatever you need to. You can probably even keep kind of sketchier hands depending on what cards are in your hand.
Don't build this deck and use that as an excuse to
excuse you, Murph.
Hands.
That's exactly why I'm building this deck. But you can also play cards like Stormherd, so it's 10 mana, but you can make similarly, right? You either exile this with Elminster, or you cast this and you just make a bunch of 1/1 white Pegasus creature tokens.
Does the same thing either way. It's fine.
It's not the same thing. You can make 40 or 10.
Okay, fine.
Aminatu's Augury, Expropriate, right? Blue has a lot of very powerful spells with a lot of mana in their mana cost. So
it's up to you, Jimmy, and audience. Figure out what type of cool stuff you want to put in the deck that you want to cheat out or reveal off the top of your deck.
Next up is the best name in the whole set. You say it, Murph.
Glunch the Bestower.
Glunch.
Glunch.
So yeah,
I had my glunch today.
You did have your glunch. Was it jellyfish? Disgusting.
Jellyfish.
Actually, jellyfish is really tasty if you've ever had it.
Remember Julian Smith
on
old YouTube?
Old YouTube.
He had a jellyfish song.
Yeah.
Those were the days.
They still are the days. That video's still there.
Those videos are still there.
These are the days. Glunch the Bestower. One green and white for a 0/5 jellyfish flying at the beginning of your end step. Choose a player. They put 2+1/+1 counters on a creature they control. Choose a second player to draw a card. Choose a third player to create 2 treasure tokens. So in the 2-player game, you just choose a player to put 2+1/+1 counters on a creature they control, and then a player to draw a card. If you have more than 2 players, then you get to do all 3, right?
Yes.
So
yeah, there's been some confusion online about if you can target the same player with all of them. No, you can't. Otherwise, this card would be busted.
Yeah, you just do it to yourself. Yeah. So you have to give other players. But the nice thing is sometimes a player has no creatures. You'd be like, all right, you put 2+1/+1 counters on creatures they control, and I'm going to draw a card. And then someone else make treasure tokens. But that is a downside if you're making someone make 2 treasure tokens and it's not yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, so usually you'll probably want to go for either the card draw or the treasure makers.
Yeah.
Because the +1/+1 counters are the weakest of the bunch, so those are probably the easiest to, like, give away.
Yeah, but the fact that in a multiplayer game you got to do all 3 kind of sucks.
I mean, this seems like
It's definitely group huggy.
Yeah, it seems like a group hug commander. I don't know how you can particularly build this to benefit yourself more than others.
Yeah. This does, all the triggers resolve at the same time as well.
Yes.
So it's pretty interesting here. I don't know. Would you build this deck? I don't think I would.
Yeah, like there is the possibility of building it as a +1/+1 counter deck because you could give yourself +1/+1 counters, hardened scales, doubling season, all that jazz.
Voron Clex, Monstrous Raider.
Yeah.
To reduce the effect on other players so you're not actually giving them as much.
Yeah. That still might not be a bad include in the deck. But yeah, there's not a ton of reasons to be running this as your +1/+1 counter commander over other +1/+1 counter commander.
Here's our first mention of Academy Manufacturer in this episode, though.
All right. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think we need to spend too much time on this card. It's just okay.
It's fine.
It's just a random green-white glunch.
Glunch.
All right, next up. Read it off.
All right, Gorion, Wise Mentor. It's a green, white, blue legendary creature, human wizard with vigilance. When you cast an adventure spell, you may copy it, and you may choose new targets for the copy.
Okay, so Adventure Tribal.
Yep.
So if you played during this very broken standard period, you will know that Edgewall Innkeeper.
Very good.
Very good. And there's also like Wandermare. So these are like whenever you cast an adventure spell that has an adventure, or a creature that has an adventure, you draw a card. Whenever you cast a creature spell that has an adventure, put a +1/+1 counter on Wandermare.
Didn't Lucky Clover like get banned or something?
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is
I feel like something from the adventure deck.
Throne of Eldraine was not a good set for constructed formats.
For the health of
Oko as well. Yeah, for the health of Magic. So you just basically play all of the cards that care about adventures. So Lucky Clover allows you to copy an adventure if it's an instant or sorcery.
So I did do some research on this. So currently, before this set comes out, there's 21 Bant adventure cards that you can play in the colors. And I checked in this set. This set also has about 15-ish.
But you're not going to want to do that, are you? Because not all of those cards are great.
No, not all those cards are great. Well, the reason that I checked was because there could be, like, what if there was 10 adventure cards in these colors?
Oh, I see. Then you can't
then
even
you
make
probably,
this deck.
Yeah, you probably don't want to make this deck. But there are a decent amount of adventures. So there's about, let's see, so 36-ish.
Okay.
So you can find, like, 25 to 30 that you like and cut probably the worst ones and still make it a pretty good deck.
Well, the nice thing is that you're going to play other cards like Archmage Meridus and Dika, Fractal Theorist, because you're technically copying the adventure spell. So you're going to get the copy ability off Archmage and Dika that allows you to either do +1/+1 counters or draw a card in Archmage.
Because anything with Magecraft cares about casting and copying. So on the initial cast, you get the Magecraft trigger, and on the copy, you get the Magecraft trigger, which is pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good. I don't know if you would play Jadzi, Oracle of Arcavios.
You could.
You could. It's an 8 mana spell, but it cares about, again, copying spells. And so if you kind of wanted to go that direction, you do have the ability in Bant to get very rampy. And so you might be able to just get to that mana and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, it seems reasonably on rails, but it can still be a fun time.
Yeah, this feels to me like a draft it and build around it in drafts type of card. It seems like it's not that amazing as a commander. Again, there just aren't enough adventure spells. But seeing now that both a traditional set of Magic and a non-traditional set with the D&D one has adventures in it maybe means that in the future there will be more added to this.
Yeah.
So that's another sort of thing just to keep
They've done it twice now. So it's not like Energy or something where they've only done it once and Energy. They haven't returned to it yet.
Yeah. Gross. All right, let's move on to Jan Jansen, Chaos Crafter. Read off, Murph.
This one's good. Red, white, and black. Legendary creature, Gnome Artificer. It's got haste. You can tap and sacrifice an artifact creature, create two treasure tokens.
Love that.
Or you can sacrifice a non-creature artifact and make two 1/1 colorless construct artifact creature tokens. And
that
it's a 3/3.
Then sacrifice to make treasures.
Yes.
So you're making two every single time, whether it's an artifact creature or a non-creature artifact.
Yeah.
You're either making 1/1s or treasure tokens.
Yeah. So basically, because you're like profiting in the amount of permanence that you have on the battlefield,
yeah,
as long as you can, increase the amount of treasures you have or the amount of tokens that you have in some way, like with Academy Manufacturer, with Zorn.
Yep. Seems pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Goldspan Dragon allows your treasures to tap for even more. In these colors, you can play Anointed Procession to make even more.
Which is good because it cares about... Anointed Procession doesn't care about whether it's just creatures. It's just tokens.
And yeah, so it's the creatures and the treasures both get doubled up as a result.
So now you're making four of each whenever you activate the ability, which is nuts.
That is pretty nuts.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then I guess you're just going to play all of the cards that really just get you there. So Mirror Battlesphere now comes in and makes 8 colorless mirror artifact creature tokens. Pretty good. All of those can be sacrificed to make treasures.
Yes.
Felden of the Third Path I really like, because it creates an artifact creature when it pulls something out of your graveyard.
And that artifact creature has to be sacrificed on your end step, so you got to get rid of it anyway.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You get it, get the value for it, and then you can sacrifice it and turn it into treasures.
Yeah, and the Felden, by the way, doesn't exile the card from the graveyard when it does it, so you can do this again. So Felden plus Mirror Battlesphere plus your commander that's going
to
be...
And it's quite likely that you're going to be wanting to include like untappers, because your commander taps, and so you can untap Felden, do it again.
Thousand Year Elixir, Staff of Domination,
yep.
Both ways to do it in these colors. Don't you play a Kelsian deck?
Yeah.
So you're basically running that same package.
Yeah, you're running the exact same package. You've got the, what was it? The one that untaps all creatures during each player's untap step. From Kamigawa.
Yeah, the 2 and the white drum bellower.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. I can't believe I pulled that out of my head. I was not paying attention when that... My child got born during that set. I was not paying attention, but drum bellower, I was like, whoa, what is this? Whoa.
This is crazy.
What's doing this? Yeah. I think the win con is one of my favorite cards of all time, Marionette Master.
So good. Love this
card. Yeah, so it says fabricate 3, so you can either make 3 1/1 servos when it enters the battlefield, or you give 3 +1/+1 counters to it. Yep. However, whenever an artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, including treasures, target opponent loses life equal to Marionette Master's power. So if this is a 4/7 or a 4/6 when it comes out, you're just, every time you sack a treasure, blam, 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 drain 4. Same with like Reckless Fireweaver, same idea.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're just making and sacrificing just a large amount of artifacts.
Yeah.
These types of things can just add up very, very quickly.
Yep. Yep. There's an infinite combo here. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah. So you can do Jan Jensen and Thornbite Staff plus any sack outlets. You can get infinite treasures.
Yay.
Infinite 1/1 constructs.
Yay.
Death or enter the battlefield triggers.
Yeah, you could do Aristocrats this deck even.
Yeah. Technically, you don't win.
It's just infinite.
But you do have as many creatures, as many treasures, as many whatever else.
There's so many ways you could win, though. Impact, Tremors, Purphoros, Marionette Master, right? So you got lots of different things you can do there. And once you have infinite mana, you could also just Staff of Domination, draw your deck, win the game, right?
Yes, exactly.
There you go. All right, cool. Jan Jensen, definitely a pretty interesting card so far.
Yeah.
All right, next up we got John Arrhenicus, Shattered One.
This is a fun one.
2 a blue and a black for a 3/3. Elf Wizard, at the beginning of your end step, target opponent gains control of up to 1 target creature you control. Put 2 +1/+1 counters on it and tap it. It's goaded for the rest of the game.
The rest of the game?
And it gains. This creature can't be sacrificed. Whoa!
Okay.
That's sexy. Very rarely see. And then whenever creature you own but don't control attacks, you draw a card. Okay. Very cool. Your end step, opponent gains a control of up to 1 creature you control.
Yes.
It gets bigger and then it's goaded for the rest of the game and it can't be sacrificed.
Yep.
It can be blocked. It can be killed by traditional means, but they can't just grab it and sacrifice it. So that's kind of cool.
That's pretty sweet.
I am playing this in my Marchesa deck 1,000%.
Oh my gosh. That seems so good.
Yeah, you can steal creatures and then give them ones back. It just seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So what do you think we should be doing here?
So what you probably want to be doing is you want to be playing creatures with downside and then give them to people, preferably creatures with downside that also have pretty good stats.
Ah.
So like Rotting Regisaur.
Yeah, it's a 3-mana 7/6. At the beginning of your upkeep, discard the card.
Yeah, and they can't get rid of it except by maybe somebody blocking it.
Yeah, it becomes a 9/8. On it. How are they going to block this thing?
Yeah.
Better hope they have Death Touch.
They're not. Like, that's so big. And so it's going to do a ton of damage. It'll empty your opponent's hand while filling your own hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That. Give them Abyssal Persecutor. It's a 6/6 for 4-mana flying trample. You can't win the game and your opponents can't lose the game. So you just give this to someone they're about to win. Like, sorry, here's your Abyssal Persecutor.
This reminds me of like Beamtown Bullies.
Yeah, it's like, can anyone block this 8/8 in the air and kill it? No? Well, I guess they still can't win the game and we can't lose even if my life total is at -20 or whatever.
Yeah, I like this a lot because what your opponents are going to have to end up doing is they're going to use removal in their hand on their own creature.
That would suck just to try and win.
But like, what else are you going to do? How else are you going to get rid of this?
I don't know. What if you get countered? They're like, fine, Tragic Slip my own Abyssal Persecutor. Do I win? Counterspell. No!
You know what you should do? You should Pact of Negation while somebody else has this Abyssal Persecutor out.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Just not pay for it.
Yeah, you don't need to pay for it.
It's fine.
Yeah,
I'm good. 0-mana counterspell.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
That's actually very funny.
You can include it in the deck. It's a good idea.
You can, yeah. John,
three ideas.
There's Asmodeus the Archfiend. This is a card that allows you to draw 7 cards for black.
And if you would draw a card, exile the top card of your library face down instead. But the important part about it is that in order to get those cards, you got to pay black mana.
Yeah. If so someone's give playing it to a green white player or a Boros player,
can't draw ever again.
Ever again. And then they have an 8/8 Devil God that is just never going to be able to die because it's 8/8.
And also can't attack you.
Yeah, that's right. This is funny.
Oh, this is so funny.
Steel Golem, 3-mana 3/4. You can't play creature spells.
Oh, a Zedru classic right there.
Zedru classic, yeah. Hellcarver Demon. This is a card that went way up because of the Beantown Bullies. But whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you sacrifice all other permanents you control and discard your hand. Exile the top 6 cards of your library. You may cast any number of non-land cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost. So you do get like some stuff out of it, but you get rid of everything else that you have.
Yeah.
What is this card? I've never seen this card before.
So there's like the Evil Eye of Ormsbygor.
Ormsbygor.
It's an eye. None eye creatures you control can't attack.
Oh, I love this.
Can't be blocked except by walls. So
this is a 5/8 that's always going to hit someone.
Always going to hit somebody. And the other creatures that opponent has cannot attack. So say somebody has a really scary board and you're like, well, they have 15 tokens. I can't goad everything or whatever. Just give them an evil eye by evil eye of Ormsbygor.
That's
and
amazing.
They can't attack with anything except for the eye itself.
Rough.
Profits.
Yeah, profit, certainly. There's also Evil Eye of Urborg. Non-eye creatures you control can't attack. And then whenever Evil Eye of Urborg becomes blocked by a creature, destroy that creature.
Yep. Does something very similar, makes it so that your opponents can't attack.
Yeah, 8/5 at this case, because it's normally 6/3.
And then there's some other fun cards that really
fun?
Play
fun.
Very fun. Very fun for the player of John Arrhenicus.
Because you cannot sacrifice the creature.
Correct.
So if you have a Phyrexian Negator out, it's a 2 in the black for a 5/5 trample. It's going to become a 7/7. Whenever it's dealt damage, sacrifice that many permanents. So if this swings in at you and you just block it with a 3/3, they have to sacrifice 3 of their permanents that aren't the Phyrexian Negator.
And it's goaded, right? So
it has to attack.
So it has to attack. As long as somebody blocks it with literally anything, they're going to start sacrificing permanents.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so fun.
That's so mean. There's also Plague Reaver. Man, maybe this is my favorite card so far. 2 in the black, 6/5, turns into an 8/7 with John Arrhenicus. At the beginning of your end step, sacrifice each other creature you control.
Holy.
And then discard 2 cards, sacrifice Plague Reaver. Sorry, can't do that. So can you even do this legally with it can't be sacrificed? It just undoes this activated ability, right?
Well, you can't activate it because you have to pay the cost.
Right.
The cost of sacrificing it, and it says you can't. So you cannot pay the cost, so you cannot give it to another opponent. So you're stuck with it. It's big. It has to attack, and you cannot keep a creature on the board as long as this thing's out.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is the end of part one of the set review.
With a mean one.
With a very mean one. Before we get into the other parts, Murph, what's your favorite commander, you think, from the ones we talked about?
John Arrhenicus, easily.
I was going to say, me too. John Arrhenicus. I've had the most fun talking about it. Although I will say I do like Commander Liara. I think that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And Duke Older, I think both have...
I do like the Duke.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting things happening for Boros in that case. Mm-hmm. But John Arrhenicus, I think, just takes the cake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So much fun, and by fun, I mean fun for me.
Fun for me, not for you, yeah. All right, to the listeners, what new commander are you excited to build? What sweet tech do you have for our community? Let us know in the comments. Of course, we're having part two of this episode coming out soon as well, so we're going to cover all the rest of the cards that we didn't talk about today that are not from the commander sets, so plenty more to come. But from these, this first batch, let us know what you're excited to build. If we missed any combos or anything, let us know as well. And hey, you're going to buy these cards. Head on over to channelfireball.com/command. That's our affiliate link. Murph?
Yeah?
Have you been typing in channelfireball.com/command to buy our magic cards?
I type in channelfireball.com, but I keep forgetting to put in the slash command.
Oh, no.
So what do I do about that, Jimmy?
Well, when you're at checkout, turns out you can just write the word command or type it. You don't write it. Don't write on your computer. Type the word in command at checkout. You also get to apply that affiliate code, and that way they'll know that we sent you there, and that's all you have to do. You get the amazing services and everything else from channelfireball.com/command, their marketplace and all that. Shopping from local game stores around the country, supporting local game stores, and you get to benefit this show at the same time. So make sure you do that. You can buy magic cards anyway, and we just talked about a bunch. I'm going to go pick up an Evil Eye of Ormsbagor right after this. And when you get those cards, put them into Ultra Pro sleeves, deck boxes, play mats. Magic events are finally starting back up around the country. If you're going to one safely, you can now bring your cards in style. And there's a lot of really cool art from this set as well. Not to mention, we trust Ultra Pro for everything. They have printed our playmats for the past three. They make just incredible products that really fit everything that you might need across the board. And they have a lot of different price points too, so that you don't need to buy the most primo thing. You can get what fits your collection for either organizing it. They have these cool backpacks as well. Josh has been using a backpack by theirs for the last, I don't know, 7 years now.
Yeah, if he ever goes to a convention, like, I always see him with it. Like, yep. He never leaves home without it.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, Ultra Pro is the place to go. And you can also go to shop.ultrapro.com/command, and you're going to find all the products there. They always have discounts as well, so you can find some great deals. Okay, no end step because this episode is too long already. So let's just go ahead and thank our amazing team here at the Command Zone. Ooh. Damon Lenz, Sean Aguilas, Arthur Meadowcroft, Ashlyn Rose, Lady Danger, Manson Lund, Craig Blanchett, Josh Murphy, right here, Jake Boss, Josh Lee Kwai, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Walder, Gaurav Galai, Chuck Ty, Jamie Block, Mitch Trafford, and Evan Limburger.
Oof. I swear, every time I do this, it gets longer.
It does. And big thanks, Jeffrey Palmer, for the living card animations that live behind this, sometimes on set, but also start our show on our YouTube channel. All right, make sure you tune in for part two of the set review. It is coming soon. Many more interesting cards from the set to talk about.
I'm super excited.
And hopefully some crazy, crazy things you can do to your opponents with cards like John Arrhenicus. All right, everyone, we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.